Chapter 3, How to Do the Work of Contemplation and Why It is the Best Work. Lift up your heart to God with a gentle stirring of love. Focus on Him alone. Want Him and not anything that He has made. Think on nothing but Him. Do not let anything else run through your mind and your will. Here's how. Forget what you know. Forget everything God made and everybody who exists and everything that's going on in the world until your thoughts and your emotions aren't focused on or reaching toward anything. Not in a general way, not in any particular way. Let them be. For the moment, do not care about anything. This is the work of the soul that most pleases God. All the saints and the angels rejoice in it, and they're always willing to help you when you're spending time in contemplation. They rush to your side, their power is ready. But contemplation infuriates the devil and his company. That's why they try to stop you any way they can. Everyone on earth has been helped by contemplation in wonderful ways. You cannot know how much. This spiritual exercise even lessens the pain for the souls in purgatory. No other discipline can purify your soul as deeply or make you as virtuous. But it's the easiest work of all. When a soul is helped by grace to feel a pure desire, contemplation follows. Otherwise, it's hard, nearly impossible to do. So stop hesitating. Do this work until you feel the delight of it. In the trying is the desire. The first time that you practice contemplation, you'll only experience a darkness, like a cloud of unknowing. You will not know what this is. You'll only know that in your will, you feel a simple reaching out to God. You must also know that this darkness and this cloud will always be between you and your God, whatever you do. They will always keep you from seeing Him clearly by the light of understanding in your intellect, and will block you from feeling Him fully in the sweetness of love in your emotions. So be sure that you make your home in this darkness. Stay there as long as you can, crying out to Him over and over again, because you love Him. It's the closest that you can get to God here on earth, by waiting in this darkness and in this cloud. Work at this diligently, as I've asked you to do. And I know God's mercy will lead you there. Chapter 4, Contemplation's Brevity and Why Knowledge and Imagination Can Acquire It. So you won't go down the wrong path in this work, thinking contemplation is something it's not. I'll tell you more about it. Some people believe that contemplation is time-consuming, but it's not. In fact, it takes less time than anything else you'll ever do. It's as brief as an atom, which excellent philosophers in the science of astronomy define as the smallest particle of time. An atom's littleness makes it indivisible, nearly inconceivable, and also invaluable. On the subject, it has been written, every moment of time is a gift to you. and one day you'll be asked how you spent each one. And you should be held responsible for it, because this briefest moment of time is exactly how long it takes your will, that strong architect of your soul, to desire something and to act on that desire. In an hour, you experience the same number of aspirations and cravings as there are atoms in that space of time. If you were restored by grace to the original purity of your soul, you'd be the master of every impulse. You'd never feel out of control, because your every desire would be directed toward the most desirable and highest good, who is God. He measures us, and he makes his divinity fit our souls, and our souls are able to take the measure of him, because he created us in his image and made us worthy. He alone is complete and can fulfill our every longing. God's grace restores our souls and teaches us how to comprehend him through love. He is incomprehensible to the intellect. Even angels know him by loving him. Nobody's mind is powerful enough to grasp who God is. We can only know him by experiencing his love. Look, every rational creature, every person, every angel has two main strengths: the power to know and the power to love. God made both of these, but he's not knowable through the first one. To the power of love, however, he is entirely known, because a loving soul is open to receive God's abundance. Each person loves uniquely, and God's limitlessness can fill all the angels and all the souls that will ever exist. His very nature makes love endless and miraculous. God will never stop loving us. Consider this truth, and if by grace you can love your own, do, for the experience is eternal joy. Its absence is unending suffering. If you were changed enough by God's grace, you could continue controlling the unceasing and inherent impulses of your will. And by succeeding in this exercise here on earth, you'd never be without a taste of the eternal sweetness. And later, in the joy of heaven, you'd never be without every food. So do not be surprised if I direct you to the work of contemplation. If humanity had never sinned, this work would not have stopped. You were made for contemplation, and everything in the universe conspires to help you with it. And contemplation will heal you. I'll tell you more about this subject later. The person who shrieks this exercise falls deeper and deeper into sin, moving further and further from God. But the one who practices this discipline rises higher and higher above sin, drawing nearer and nearer to God. So take good care of your time. Watch how you spend it, for nothing is more precious. In the twinkling of an eye, heaven can be won or lost. Here's how we know time is precious. God, the giver of time, never gives us two moments simultaneously. Instead, he gives them to us one after another. We never get the future. We only get the present moment. He does this to establish order in his creation and to keep cause and effect in place. Time is made for us. We are not made for time. God is the ruler of nature, but his gift of time has no strings attached. It never determines our own nature and natural impulses. Instead, each of these exactly corresponds to one atom of time. In that way, none of us has an excuse on Judgment Day when we go before God to give an account of how we spent our time. We will not be able to say, "You gave me 2 moments at once to my every single impulse." I can hear you complaining. What am I supposed to do then? I know you're right, but how can I give an itemized account of each moment? I am 24 already. I never noticed time before. Your argument has already convinced me there is no way I can go back in time and change things. Time does not work that way, nor does ordinary grace. I cannot go back in time and make amends. I'm also aware that because I'm weak and slow about some things spiritually, I can no more control the time to come than I did in the time past. At best, I'll manage maybe 1 out of 100 impulses well. So tell me what to do. Help me now. For the love of Jesus. It is good that you said, "For the love of Jesus," for in the love of Jesus you will find your help. Love is so powerful that it shares everything. So love Jesus, and everything that he has will be yours. Through his divinity, he is the maker and the giver of time. And through his humanity, he is the true keeper of time. His divinity and his humanity combined make him the best judge, the one most qualified to question how we've spent our time. Cling to him in love and in faith, and through that powerful bonding, you will become his companion. His friends will be yours. By friends, I mean Our Lady, Saint Mary, who is full of grace and made the most of her time, the heavenly angels, who never waste time, and the saints in heaven and on earth, who by the grace of Jesus and through the power of love make best use of their time. See, this truth will comfort you, and it will give you strength. Think clearly about what I've said, and your soul will grow. I do want to warn you about one thing in particular. I do not believe anyone can have a fellowship with Jesus, his Holy Mother, and the angels on high, and his saints, if that person does not make the effort to understand and appreciate time with the help of grace. No matter how small the contribution, every person must work to strengthen the fellowship as it does them. Start practicing contemplation and watch how this spiritual exercise makes a difference in your life. When contemplation is genuine, it's nothing but a sudden impulse coming out of nowhere and flying up to God like a spark from a burning coal. It is awesome to count how many times your soul stirs like that in 1 hour. But of these, you may only have one instance when you suddenly realize you've completely forgotten every attachment that you have on earth. You will also notice that because of our human frailty, each impulse rising to God immediately falls to earth in the form of a thought about something that you've done or something that is still on your list to do. But so what? Right after that, it rises up again as fast as it did before. See how it works. Contemplation is quite different from daydreaming, or a delusion, or a strange superstition. These do not come from a sincere and humble blind steering of love, but from an arrogant, curious, and over-imaginative mind. The self-important, the hyper-analytical intellect must always and in every way be squashed. Stomp it underfoot if you want to do the work of contemplation with integrity. A person hearing this book read or quoted may misunderstand my point. I am not saying that if a person thinks hard enough, he or she will succeed in the work of contemplation. I do not want people sitting around analyzing, racking their brains, their curiosity forcing their imagination to go entirely the wrong way. It's not natural. It's not wise for the mind. It is not healthy for the body. These people are dangerously deluded. It would take a miracle to save them. God in His infinite goodness and mercy would have to intervene, making these people stop such a wrong-minded approach and seek the counsel of experienced contemplatives. Otherwise, such erring souls could succumb to madness, frenzied fits, or the devil's lies, which lead to the profound misery of sin and eventually to the loss of body and soul for all eternity. So, for the love of God, be careful in this work. Do not in any way approach contemplation with your intellect or your imagination. I am not telling you the truth. These won't help you. I am telling you the truth. These will not help you. Leave them be and do not try to do the work of contemplation with them. Also, do not get the wrong idea about my use of darkness and cloud. When I refer to this exercise as a darkness or a cloud, I do not want you to imagine the darkness that you get inside your house at night when you blow out your candle. Nor do I want you to imagine a cloud crystallized from the moisture in the air. It's easy for your mind to picture either of these at the same time. Example, even on the brightest, clearest summer day, you can imagine darkness or a cloud. Conversely, on the darkest night of the winter, you can form a mental picture of a clear and a shining light. They are not what I mean at all. Leave them alone. This way of thinking is nonsense. When I say darkness, I mean the absence of knowing. Whatever you do not know, whatever you've forgotten, are dark to you, because you do not see them with your spiritual eyes. For the same reason, by cloud, I do not mean a cloud in the sky, but a cloud of unknowing between you and God.